Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-HQMP or 4767 for appointments.
Hello once again and welcome back to the Vox Pop. Wow, it's going to be a terrific show. WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. The World Health Organization defines sexual health as a state of physical, emotional, mental, and social well-being in relation to sexuality. It is not merely the absence of disease, dysfunction, or infirmity. Joining us in the studio today for Medical Monday is Dr. Bridget Finn. She's a sexual health expert and licensed sex therapist practicing with Affiliated Psychological Services in Latham, New York. She specializes in therapy for couples and individuals and has over 25 years' experience in counseling and improving relationships both inside and outside the bedroom. Dr. Finn earned a doctorate in human sexuality from the University of Pennsylvania. He's a guest lecturer at Albany Medical College in the Behavioral Psychiatry, Obstetrics and Gynecology, and Family and Community Medicine departments. She provides training for medical students, resident physicians, and faculty on sexual health and functioning. Dr. Finn, welcome to Medical Monday.
No, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
And we love having you here. Let me just say to everybody, I'm going to give you some rules now. Clinical terms are okay. You know what the words you shouldn't be saying are, that's it. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We want to hear from you. I'd love to hear from you. And in the meantime, I'll ask Dr. Finn, who I think is terrific, whatever questions I can think of. How'd you get into this, Doc?
I've been in this a long time. I was very fortunate to be a sexual health educator with Planned Parenthood way, way back in the day. And my work with them led me to just about every audience and every possibility to speak about sex. And over the years, I learned just how intimately important it is to people's lives and overall health and well-being. So I've been doing it from the therapeutic angle as well as education and research for quite a while. It's wonderful work.
So, you know, when people come to you, what do they ask you?
Well, typically, the thing to keep in mind is the overarching trend that I'm seeing is that folks are not okay living with mediocre sex and intimacy in their relationships. And they come to me to figure out how to either restart intimacy in a relationship or how to keep it going. And also they come to me at different times in their lives when they're struggling with their sex and sexuality and how to experience pleasure.
You're Catholic, right?
I am. Bridget Mary Margaret.
Bridget Mary Margaret,
yes.
Right. And so, procreation is supposed to be the reason you have sex. Do you believe that?
Well, no, I don't believe that. I think that the clitoris has 10,000 nerve endings and the purpose of the clitoris is strictly for pleasure. I don't think it was put there by accident. So I think that it's important, however, it's less about what I believe as much as understanding where my clients are when they come to me in terms of their spirituality and how it's impacting their ability to apprehend a fulfilling, compelling, inspiring sex life. If it's conflictive, if the messages are conflictive with that, that's something we can certainly work through. And I'll tell you, across the gamut with different spiritualities and religions, people feel very differently within those as well. So there really isn't one blanket answer that everyone, abides by within a certain spirituality. There's variation for sure within.
So, this is also conflictive if you think about it. We've got women's empowerment now. We have people who say, but you have men who say, well, I want to see my partner in a sexy 90.
Mm-hmm.
What happens when you get those kinds of questions?
Well, there's nothing wrong with a sexy 90, right? Unless someone is uncomfortable with that. The only normal is variation within all of this. And part of my work is helping people understand what they prefer and what would be exciting for them and what would be inspiring for them. And that varies across the board with people. You'd be surprised.
Okay. So again, somebody comes into your office and they say, Doc, I I find it very hard to achieve orgasm.
Right.
You then have to diagnose what the problem is. Mm-hmm.
I want to know if that person has had trouble having an orgasm always, or if there's something that's been happening in their lives that has impacted them, such as grief, a divorce, a change in financial status. You know, the thing to keep in mind is that oftentimes the sexual issue that someone comes to me with is a symptom of a larger thing going on. I always ask people, are you grieving? Particularly if they're in, if, for example, my age frame where we're caregiving parents, you know, and people don't always understand the connection between what's happening in their lives as a whole and how it's influencing them in the bedroom. Mm. So I help people understand that, you know, oftentimes I get a question of, you know, what impacts sex and sexuality? And my answer is everything. Mm. Everything.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Let's go to Diane. Okay, Diane. You're on, Diane.
Hey, hi there. I have been placed on to serotonin, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, or SSRIs, which have a well-known effect on the libido and the ability to achieve orgasms. And I have not noticed quite so much with the libido, but definitely, even though, you know, I'm quite aroused and, you know, and I just can't go over the edge, as I like to say. And I wonder, are there, I've already spoken to my prescribing physician about this, and the suggestion was put to me that I not take one tablet the night before my partner comes to, you know, we don't live together or anything, so I don't see him all that often. So we're able to sort of time that, and I've tried it, I think, 3 times. And it has had no effect to take. He told me I can't. My dose is not high enough to allow me to go without more than one tablet. It's 20 mg of Paxil.
So Diane, yeah. I want to just start us out so everybody knows it. Our expert today is a PhD. She does not prescribe drugs. However, she observes what drugs do to people.
Exactly.
With that said, I want to just give it over to you.
Hi, Diane.
Okay, great. Thank you.
I'm glad you called in. Yes, it's not unusual that I hear people struggling with libido and orgasm if they're dealing with an SSRI. My questions to you would be, is this something that's new for you, the orgasm difficulty?
Totally.
Yeah,
it is. Uh-huh. It is new. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And I would also, of course, always start with wondering how the relationship is, if you're feeling compelled and inspired, if it feels like it's in a good, healthy place.
Yes. It does.
Okay.
Yes.
And how about if you're self-pleasuring, Diane? I'm wondering if you're noticing a difference when you're self-pleasuring versus a partner.
Exactly. Well, that was foremost in my mind. And at first, I just didn't even feel like trying that.
Mm-hmm.
Then at one point, I did. And it was like getting blood from a stone. I mean, I finally did force myself to, like, you know. And then another time, a few days later, I had been experimenting with Benoit balls.
Uh-huh.
And they had an effect on me by the time, you know, I had them on for a while. It was like the old days.
Okay, so it worked.
So, yeah, self-pleasuring. But then I went back then the following time that my partner was with me.
Mm-hmm.
It was back to kind of, it's just really problematic. It really is. I just feel like I just am, like, so close to, but not. Right.
You know.
I want to add something onto this, and then we have to take a break. But I wanted to ask you about this, Bridget. Don't you think, though, that preparation in itself can be off-putting? In other words, I don't take the pill 2 days before my lover comes to see me.
Yeah.
Or, you know, even those people who still wear condoms,
mm-hmm.
or who wear condoms and should. And the idea that you're putting one on stops the flow of things.
Right, exactly. You know, one thing I do tell people is I think spontaneity is terrific, but it's overrated. And this day and age with our lifestyles and the way we do need to schedule things and plan things because of work and children and whatnot, anticipation is pretty sexy. And so,
it can be, yeah.
Yeah, very sexy. So I try to get people away from that sort of romance novel idea that I'm going to be swept off my feet with a spontaneous act. It's great once in a while, but we need to sort of be embracing anticipation a little bit more.
Okay. 1-800-348-2551. Diane, we got to take a break. I thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
It's a great
thank you
first
very much.
Call. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
support comes from Skidmore Departments of Music and Dance, presenting Tchaikovsky's Sleeping Beauty with 80 dancers and 73 musicians at Zankel, Friday through Sunday, skidmore.edu/Zankel. The Stram Center, investigative medicine, specializing in Lyme, women's health, gastrointestinal, cancer treatment, acupuncture, and nutrition, located 10 minutes from Albany and in Bennington, Vermont, stramcenter.com. Allardyce Glass and Mirror, Saratoga Springs, New York, providing sales, service, and installation of glass, shower enclosures, mirror, and screen products for the home, allardyce.com. Ward's Nursery and Garden Center, Great Barrington, featuring dahlia and gladiola bulbs, houseplants, pansies, violas, orchids, and gardening gear, wardsnursery.com. And the UMass Fine Arts Center, presenting the Nile Project, a multilingual musical collaboration from 11 countries along the Nile River. Tomorrow in the Fine Arts Center Concert Hall, fineartscenter.com.
Thank you, Zachary. We're talking about sex today. We have a terrific sex therapist with us, Dr. Bridget Finn, licensed sex therapist, educator, and researcher, here to answer your questions about sexual health and how it can affect your health overall. Do people, Bridget, who don't have enough sex according to what they want, find that it gets over into their mental or even physical problems?
Absolutely. When we're not feeling connected intimately, if we're in a relationship, it can spill into feelings around self-worth, self-esteem, confidence. It can leak into some depression. We feel unwanted, unloved. It has great implications in overall wellness. And even if someone's having an issue that perhaps was physiological in origin, it turns into a relationship issue. It turns into an emotional and a mental issue. So it's important to be treating with a holistic approach, considering the mind, body, and spirit when it comes to sex, because it's all connected.
Well, we see, I don't know how to say this, but if you take the New York Times magazine, not one of the sexual magazines, but the way in which we sexualize women in particular, mm-hmm. One wonders whether that is setting up some of the why can't I have this among men?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, there are some stereotypes and some myths that I think are important to talk about. And when it comes to the genders in a relationship, and one of the, we've been sold a bill of goods when it comes to sex in a lot of ways. And one of them is that that men are out to, you know, they just want the beautiful woman who they can be sexual with. And, you know, men get a bad rap. They are, I've been working with them for years, and they are so committed to wanting to please their partner. It's very, very important that he pleases his partner and that she comes first, you know.
Sure.
And for women, you know, it does set up an expectation around body that, you know, oftentimes I hear, if I could just lose 10 pounds, then maybe I would be comfortable in this position or a different position or on my, you know, knees or whatever. And my rear end wouldn't look so big or my breasts wouldn't sag. So women tend to settle for mediocre sex because of their uncertainty and insecurity around their bodies, which is fed to us from the larger society.
1-800-348-2551. I want to hear from you. I mean, this is a terrific program. And the idea that this is something that goes back to the caves quite clearly, you know, to the way we've evolved. We always talk about the birds and the bees, mm-hmm. but men and women have, and women and women have mm-hmm. Been attracted for, you know, since the beginning of time. And yet it is a taboo that most people, you know, some people shy away from. 1-800-348-2551. What do you say, Bridget?
Well, people do shy away from it, but that's changing. And as the generations change, people want to have the conversation, which is really what I talk about. Having the conversation, we don't have the vocabulary, which leads us to lack of confidence. And when you think about it, most people had, if they were lucky, one conversation about sex in their when they were going through puberty. And it was typically about either prevention of pregnancy or prevention of disease or, you know, prevention of being taken advantage of. And rarely, if ever, was anyone spoken to about pleasure. So we have a context within which sex is understood that's very dysfunctional. It's typically hypocrisy. Sex is dirty, so save it for the one you love, which is always a good one. We have secrecy. We have shame. We have fear. So the context within which it's discussed and understood is quite unhealthy.
I once read a book by Albert Ellis, I'm sure you know his work, in which he said, and the name of the book was The American Sexual Tragedy. And it's pretty much just what you just said, which is, you know, we gussy everybody up. We say, you know, you have to look attractive, but don't do it.
Yeah, don't do it. Yeah, and it creates a bunch of conflicts for people internally. So they know they want to have something inspiring and compelling in the bedroom with their partner, but either a family message or a religious message, spiritual or societal message, has led them to be feeling quite conflicted about what they would like to have versus what they've been told they should or shouldn't have.
So are people who are repressed because of religious reasons, for example, quite frequently get a little bit more frantic than others do?
Well, they can, or, you know, it really depends. If you have a relationship that two people are in it and they are content with what's being experienced sexually, then you don't have a problem, right? It's typically if one person wants something different or something more, then you have a conflict.
Okay. All the phones are lighting up. I'm going to get to them in a moment. And Anonymous says, my girlfriend of 4 years has never achieved an orgasm, not on her own or with a partner. Is there something she can do or anyone she could see? She was prescribed SSRIs as a prepubescent child, but she's not on them now. Thank you so much for the show.
Right. Well, you know, orgasm is really about letting go. It's really about letting go emotionally as well as physically. But it's important not to think of it as an achievement. Because when we start to think of it as an achievement, it's a very linear perspective on sex to, you know, first base, second base, third base, fourth base, you achieve an orgasm, really. And sex is much more circular than linear. And so when people get in their minds that this is something that has to happen every single time, they're setting themselves up for disappointment. Because the truth is, unlike on the soap operas where everyone orgasms together, you know, sometimes you orgasm, sometimes you don't. Sometimes it blows the roof off, sometimes it doesn't. It's more of a whimper than a bang, right? Mm-hmm. So it's very different. It doesn't always feel the same way. We have tied a lot of meaning into orgasm. If it's not something that blows me away or if it's not something that happens every single time, then I'm somehow a failure. Or the partner can see him or herself as a failure as well, not being able to please.
Now, what about people who fantasize while they're having sex? Mm-hmm. In other words, they're thinking about someone else or something else.
Yeah. Well, what about them?
Well, that's my question.
Yeah, it happens, you know, but typically, you know, and there's nothing wrong with fantasy. And again, it's really about two people having a conversation about what works for them. It's amazing the variety that I see of behaviors and activities. Some people saying, you know, no, that's really not something I'm comfortable with. And then other people are like, yeah, let's give that a try.
Yeah.
So you really, you know, opposites do not attract when it comes to a good sexual relationship. You really need to find someone who shares your values around behaviors and activities.
So don't marry for money?
Well, maybe the second time.
Let's go to Susan in Greenfield. Okay, Susan, you're on.
Hi. My question is about painful intercourse.
Mm-hmm.
Since I went through menopause a few years ago, vaginal penetration is very painful. It's not just dryness. So lubrication does not necessarily help.
Okay.
And therefore the pleasure is you know, is a lot, is lessened, and it's quite concerning. Do you have any recommendations?
Well, I'm wondering if you know, I would want to know about your perspectives on menopause, because, again, you know, we're kind of told that once menopause hits, it's all over for us. And some people buy into that.
No, that's not my perspective.
Okay, well, that's terrific, because it can really be a time of a whole new experience for women, really sort of going through a second puberty. How is it affecting your relationship?
I'm currently not in relationship, mm-hmm. but when I was, it just meant less frequency.
Yeah, yeah. Well, why would you want to do something that's painful, right?
Right.
Right. And how about when you're self-pleasuring? Are you self-pleasuring?
Yeah, it doesn't affect the external genitalia,
okay.
just the internal.
Okay. And have you spoken with your medical doctor?
No.
Okay. I would absolutely recommend that you do that, because there are some great interventions with not just lubrications, but moisturizers, which are, lubrication is something that we kind of put on an as-needed basis, whereas a moisturizer is something that stays with us throughout and isn't just when we're going to have sex. And also there's some estrogen options as well, Susan. So my advice to you would absolutely be to see your OB-GYN and see what answers they might have for you. A terrific book I would recommend is by Christiane Northrup. It's called The Secret Pleasures of Menopause.
Mm-hmm.
And she talks about having great sex at this point in our lives.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And the moisturizers, are they estrogenic also, or?
I'm not 100% sure of the makeup of them, and there's more than one option. So you definitely want to ask about that. Have a conversation about the difference between the lubricants and the moisturizers, and that could be a way for you to go, because you might be having some vaginal atrophy from going through menopause. So we want to keep that blood flowing. We want to keep you lubricated and aroused.
Mm-hmm. Great. Susan, thank you very much.
You're welcome,
great call,
Susan. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah. Let's go to Denise in the Berkshires. Denise, you're on.
Hi. My husband's 63 years old, and he's on all kinds of medications that the side effects are he can't get an erection.
Mm-hmm.
And none of the Viagras or any of that help at all.
Okay.
And so I'm wondering, you know, sometimes we just fool around a little bit, but, you know, you can only do so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm wondering if he even really has any sex drive at all.
Well, Denise, you know, it's interesting, because when someone is attempting to experience sexual pleasure and to turn their partner on, and they continue to not be able to get there, oftentimes it can really wreak havoc on the mental state. And so it can absolutely impact libido if we feel like every time we're stepping up. Because remember earlier I said for men, it's very important to them that they're pleasing their partners. And when they can't do that, they can get quite depressed. So and then from the depression could come a decrease in his libido. There are other options beyond Viagra, Levitra, and Cialis. I highly recommend that you spend some time with a good urologist who specializes in sexual functioning to talk about, you know, some injections or perhaps other options that are out there. And in the meantime, don't back away from it. Typically what people do is they figure, well, then we just won't do anything. It gets very stressful. They stop talking about it. And my answer to that is, get in there, keep kissing, keep touching, you know, make sure you're having oral sex, make sure you're staying connected, and fight for a good sex life. There are people out there that you can talk to that can help you along the way. But my guess is, if your husband is unable to please you, he's starting to lose some desire, because it just feels lousy to not be able to please you.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks a lot.
Denise, thank you very much. Appreciate
all right.
That. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, 3 free phones. Now's a good time to make a call. Get online. Could change your life. Let's go to Roger in Gloversville, I guess. No, well, Roger's gone. That's gone. So let's go to Diana in Housatonic, Massachusetts. Now your chances of getting in are, right after Diana, your chances of getting in are excellent. Go ahead, Diana.
Hi, Alan, and hi, Doctor. Here's my question. As one ages, one loses, you know, sight goes and hearing goes. And I've read recently that your feeling also goes. So I'm wondering if there's anything that you can do to hold on to your feeling, nerve centers, or to make sure, you know, so that you can continue to have the pleasure that sexual, good sexual encounters can produce.
Well, what a great question, Diana, and I'm so glad that you called in about that because, you know, we are sexual beings in our entire lifespan, and what may have felt good to you or the skin, say, in the 20s and 30s, feels differently as we age. And so what happens, though, is that people tend to think of their sexual pleasure as a static photo, so they don't consider that as we age, we need to re-examine and re-explore what feels good on our skin and on our bodies. Some things kind of, you know, feel off-putting as we get older, and some things we didn't like when we were younger feel good as we age. The most important thing is that you continue to explore your own body. First and foremost, our first sexual relationship should be with ourselves, and continue to see what feels good on you in all different parts. We have a tendency to be very genital focused, and we know that our erogenous zones go way beyond our genitals. So, you know, really just exploring and rediscovering yourself as you're getting older. But I think it's terrific that we understand that as we age, you know, we still want to have a good sex life. I have clients who are well into their 80s.
It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're looking forward to a long, active sex life.
Well, that's terrific because it's good for overall health and well-being in every sense. It's good for stress. It's good for our immune system, cardiovascular, for our sleep. It just makes us happy. And the happier couples are the ones who are having good sex and good intimacy.
So do we think that sex helps people sleep?
We know sex helps people sleep. Yes, it's good. And it's also good for menstrual cramps. It's good for stress. It's good for everything.
Diana, thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye. 1-800-348-2551. Get online. This is really a terrific show. Let's go to Dan in Northampton. Dan.
Hello. My question has to do with something called post-orgasmic illness syndrome, POIS,
mm-hmm.
And I wondered your familiarity with it or if other patients have described this. I've suffered from this. I'm in my early 50s.
Okay.
Since my early 20s, and it's gotten much more severe over time.
Can you tell me what happens, Dan, post-orgasm?
I experience severe listlessness,
mm-hmm.
and brain fog and just a lack of will. I kind of feel like, I mean, it definitely is physiological. It does heal. I mean, it does, I do recover from it. When I was in my 20s, the recovery period was about 20 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Now in middle age, it can last up to 5 or 6 days.
Okay. So.
And I become completely, you know, it's hard to go out and even face the world. You can even become a little agoraphobic. I mean, the psychological second and third generation effects are pretty big.
Mm-hmm. And have you spoken with anyone in the past about this?
Yes, I spoke to my doctor.
Yeah.
He knew of it.
Mm-hmm.
There is a theory out there. There's a guy in, I think, Denmark, Marcel Waldinger, who had a theory that it was actually an allergy to one's own semen,
mm-hmm.
causing this. And I was being treated by an allergist for a time, being injected with my own semen into my blood. This is what they've been doing in Denmark to try to treat this. I have not had any positive results from this.
Right.
I don't actually feel that it's an allergy. My own theory is that it's got something to do with testosterone depletion.
Uh-huh.
I have not seen a urologist about this, and I'm thinking that's my next step.
I absolutely agree with you, Dan. I would highly recommend that you see a urologist so that you could, you know, we always want to start with seeing what's going on physiologically. And my work would really be around how it's impacting your lifestyle, how it's impacting your feelings about yourself and a partner,
sure.
if there is one. You know, so this is something that you would want to treat holistically. And
yes.
I would definitely go to a urologist, once again, who specializes in sexual functioning.
Yes.
And have this conversation and see if there's any possibilities for you for the physiological component of it. And seek out the help of a counselor to talk about,
yeah.
you know, because it sounds like it's quite debilitating for your life.
It absolutely is.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't, when you were saying about how it affects everything in your
yeah.
life, I feel like I'm an absolute example of that. I mean, career-wise, relationship-wise, I mean, this has had so many spin-off negative things from it. You know, it's very sad, you know, because I'm basically a really good guy.
Well, I'm sure you are. But the last thing we want, Dan, is for you to step away from your sexuality, because that's where the tragedy would be. So we want you to keep pursuing options and seeing if there's someone who has an answer out there for you. But in the meantime, get in and speak with someone about the mental and emotional journey as well, because that's just as important and highly linked.
I agree.
Okay, Dan, thank you for your call.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, bye-bye. We're going to take a very short break, and then we'll be back. We've got a couple of people on the line, but there are three free phones right now, so get on board, 1-800-348-2551.
Support comes from New York Oncology Hematology, offering clinical research trials towards FDA approval of new cancer treatments, and coming this spring, a new location in Clifton Park. NewYorkOncology.com for a list of clinical trials. Buttermilk Falls in Milton, New York, taking reservations for dinner, spa weekends, weddings, and events on a 75-acre Hudson River estate with lodgings, a farm-to-table restaurant, and spa. ButtermilkFallsInn.com. Nathan LaTower Hospital welcoming Dr. Alvarez, a gastroenterologist specializing in diseases of the digestive system, practicing in their new endoscopy center in Johnstown, New York, accepting new patients, nlh.org. And Mass Mocha, North Adams, Massachusetts, and Jacob's Pillow, presenting two nights of modern dance with Kegwin and Company on Friday and Saturday, massmocha.org.
We're delighted to be back. It's a wonderful show, and we really so thank Dr. Bridget Finn, licensed sex therapist, educator, and researcher, and she's answering your questions about sexual health. Okay, let's go to Mike in Southampton. Mike, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon. You had a previous caller that called and said her husband had lost all interest in sex, and then she also said that he was on a bunch of medications, and just as a personal experience, there's a ton of different drugs that all fall in the same category of beta blockers, and one of their side effects that the doctors almost never tell you about is that it takes away all sexual thoughts completely.
Yeah.
I was on eye drops when I was in my early 40s for glaucoma. We're talking two drops a day in one eye. 8 weeks after I started, I don't think I'd thought a sexual thought at all.
Okay.
So it's just, you know, one of those things that you just have to kind of like go through the whole list when you're trying to get the problem, and that the beta blockers are sneaky and nobody ever tells you about them.
Well, Mike, you make a good point, because it's important. What we know is that patients want their physicians to talk to them about sex. It can be difficult, because it can be uncomfortable, because oftentimes physicians don't feel as though they have the time, or if they start the conversation, they don't necessarily know where to take it. So what's happening now, which is terrific, is that physicians are starting to ask the questions, and patients are also stepping up and asking their physicians specifically, how will this impact my sex life? How will this impact my intimacy with myself or with my partner? So, you know, long gone are the days of people just sort of sitting back and not asking those questions or walking away without that information. We always want to be asking the question of how will this affect my health, and also how will it affect my sexual health? You know, no reason to be embarrassed about asking those questions at this point with our medical professionals.
Agreed.
Okay, well, thank you so much for the call. Appreciate it. And one thing I can suggest is, certainly not in your category, Bridget, but everybody, you know, when you get a medication, it always comes with a piece of paper that tells you all the noticed side effects. One should read those things.
Absolutely. And when it comes to sex specifically, because of the difficulty of having the conversation and some potential awkwardness, it's even more important to specifically ask that question.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mike. Appreciate it. All right, let's go. I think Lynn is gone, so let's go to Jim in Scaghtikoke. Jim, you're on. Jim, you're on? Hello, Jim. Whoops. Well, I guess Jim's not there anymore. Okay, let's go to Jennifer in Monroe, New York. Jennifer, you're on.
Hi. I have a question. I've been suffering from severe depression for the last 20 years, mm-hmm. and it's medication resistant. I have been on medications where there are very low sexual side effects.
Mm-hmm.
I've lost my libido quite a few times throughout this period. I began a relationship about 7 years ago, and my libido was fine. I could orgasm fine, and it lasted for about a year.
Okay.
And since then, my libido is completely gone again.
Okay. Jennifer, what happened a year ago in this relationship?
Let's see. No, actually, this happened a year into the relationship.
Oh, a year into the relationship. Did anything change in the relationship that may have impacted you?
My depression got a bit worse. They were switching medications. I told my therapist and my psychiatrist that about the problem I was having.
Mm-hmm.
They switched it to medication that had a very low impact with one sex drive, and it still didn't work.
Okay.
At this point, you know, say for the last 5 years, my boyfriend and I have had sex maybe 10 times.
Okay. Are you doing other things, Jennifer, to keep things sort of alive and interesting, other sexual behaviors in addition to intercourse?
I try to.
Right.
And
the reason I ask that is because in the past we believed that desire needed to come first in order to spur arousal. And now what we know is that arousal can spur desire. So even if you're not feeling like it physiologically, it's important to engage in it if you're feeling good in the relationship, if it's a healthy relationship that you want to be in, to engage in sexual behaviors, even though the libido might not be real high. And that can actually spur some arousal. So don't wait until you're feeling like it. Jump in anyway and see if that makes a difference with compelling some desire.
That's actually very good to know.
Okay.
When I do try and self-pleasure...
Yeah.
I may get very close to orgasm, but then it just disappears.
Right. Again, don't be so focused on the orgasm. Just enjoy the journey. Keep self-pleasuring. Keep enjoying yourself. And again, that will impact your desire, because the inclination, again, is to back away from everything.
Yeah.
And so you want to keep things going. You want to keep things alive, even if it's not, compelling you fully at the moment.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Jennifer.
That's very helpful. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Okay, let's go to Lynn in Williamsburg. Lynn, you're on.
Hi. I have a question about normal, not normal. For my entire life, as long as I can remember, I really have not had much libido at all.
Mm-hmm.
And talked to my doc and did all the tests and whatever for hormones, and basically said I had the hormonal makeup of an 80-year-old. That was nice to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And, my husband and I... We have a fantastic relationship, and I understand that for him this is extremely important, and for me it's just not there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just curious, is that a range of what's normal and or not?
Well, it's interesting. I was talking about what's normal earlier, and really what's normal is variation. And,
mm-hmm.
The thing about sex throughout the lifespan is that our interest can ebb and flow, and it fluctuates depending upon different developmental stages that we might be going through. The most important thing to remember is, I do have clients well into their 80s who are having wonderful sex lives, and mm-hmm. to continue to stay engaged with your partner, to continue having all kinds of sexual contact, even if it's not leading to, the orgasm or the amount or range of desire and arousal that you're looking for, because the relationship can start to come a little bit unraveled when people aren't staying connected intimately.
Oh, certainly.
So you want to jump in there. And again, as we age, it's important to explore, where are we at now in our relationship with my body? How am I feeling? And what can I do that could feel different and new and exciting?
For me, this has never been an ebb and flow. It has been an ebb. Are there other people that just really have never had a very strong sexual desire?
Oh, absolutely, Lynn. And that goes for men and women. You know, libido comes in all shapes and sizes. You want to also, you know, and I'm not sure if you're exercising or what your nutrition and your sleep and stress are and all of those things. You want to be self-pleasuring. You want to keep it on a rolling boil, on the burner of the stove. We don't want anything to get cold and to stop touching and connecting, because that's your best bet, to just keep it alive.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Okay. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Rachel, welcome to the program. You're on, Rachel.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Rachel.
Thank you for taking my call. My question is about being able to talk with my husband about, like, desires. I came out of a very abusive relationship and became very repressed sexually, and now I'm married to an amazing man who would do anything I want, but I just have a really hard time talking about what it is I want.
Mm-hmm. Well, Rachel, do you know what you want and you're having difficulty communicating it, or are you unsure about what you want?
I think it's a matter that I know what I want, but I just have a hard time communicating.
Right. Well, there's different ways to communicate. And sometimes, you know, for people, it can be tough to talk about it. That's why when I was speaking earlier about, most of us didn't get a whole lot of opportunity to talk about it. And very rarely did we get an opportunity to talk about pleasure and what feels good. So if you're having trouble talking about it, sometimes I have my clients write about it. Would that be something that would feel doable for you, to be able to write out what you would like for your partner to read?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. There's many ways to communicate, and they're not rank order. So if writing feels better or talking is a little bit intimidating, as you start to write, it will open up some conversation. You'll gain some confidence, and you'll gain some vocabulary for the two of you.
So thank you
have
so
some
much.
Fun with it. Have fun with it.
I will. Thank you so much.
You're
Thanks
welcome.
A lot.
All right. Bye-bye.
I'm reading a new biography by Michael Schneerson of Governor Cuomo, and what happened between him and his wife, Ms. Kennedy, in one of the great political marriages of all times. And she cheated, which brings up the question, at least according to this book, brings up the question of whether what leads people to cheat is that they're looking for variation.
Well, cheating happens for a number of reasons. What I will say is that when we are in a relationship, there are rules of engagement. There's expectations that we're going to be having sex. Unless both people are okay with having a sexless or near sexless relationship, then you're going to have a problem. When someone wants to be intimate and be sexually connected with their partner and it's not happening, it leads to resentment, it leads to distancing, it leads to anger, and unfortunately, it can lead to cheating. So it's important, once again, you can't opt out of being sexual with your partner, or don't be in a relationship, because it really is sort of the expectation, unless two people agree that it's okay not to.
I'll bet you got some people angry with that one.
Probably. Wouldn't be the first time.
Let's go to Ron in Colony. Ron, you're on.
Alan, you've got a great guest here.
Isn't that right? You're so
yes,
right.
She is.
Hi, Ron.
How you doing?
Good.
I got two quick points and then your comment. One is, there's a really fantastic book by the best male herbalist in the country, and that's Stephen Harrod Buhner. It's called The Natural Testosterone Plant, with Sexual Health and Energy. And I would highly recommend. It's mostly for men, but it really isn't. It's for both.
Yeah.
But the people that are on these cholesterol-lowering drugs, all hormones start with cholesterol. That converts to pregnenolone, and then it goes to androgens and estrogens. I think that really has to be looked at, just like your comment.
Yeah,
you
know, the thing about hormone therapies, of course, they're always controversial, and something is always new and different coming out in the research. That's why it's important to work specifically with a urologist who is working directly in the field of sexual health, in the field of sexual functioning. And again, it really does become about the patient also doing his or her homework as well when they're showing up for the appointment. relevant, yeah, to be
Absolutely.
Talking about all of these things. You know, again, we're living in an age where people aren't interested in settling for deprivation when it comes to good sex. So all of these questions about physical, emotional, mental, all of that need to be presented to the caretaker.
So what's your opinion on that? I mean, you know that cholesterol starts at all.
Well, she
and
they
is want not these levels too low.
Now, she's not a physician, Ron. She's
okay.
a PhD.
Yep, she doesn't want to make
yeah, scientific. Mm-hmm. So thank you very much, Ron. Appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you. I really yeah. appreciate it. Yep.
Let's go to Tom in Albany. Tom in Albany, you're on.
Hi there. I got married about 4 years ago, and before that, and before when I was dating my wife, you know, she had a lot of sexual interest, and now it's not as much. There's mm-hmm. actually, I'm in my early 50s,
mm-hmm.
and she's 15 years younger than I am.
Okay.
I guess before I met her, I could have sex 5 times a day.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like twice a week, but
okay.
I still think about it 5 times. Okay. Even after we have sex,
right.
I think about having sex.
Okay. Well, you know, sex in a relationship is something that absolutely needs to be negotiated in terms of frequency, behaviors, activities, that sort of thing. I'm wondering if there's anything that's going on in your relationship or with your wife that could be impacting her interest.
I don't think so. We both work a lot, but mm-hmm. I just think that it's, it's like 4 years later, and it started slowing down over about a year ago. And
Children?
From past
mm-hmm.
Wedding
yeah.
marriages, but no, we don't have children together.
Right. And what can impact, Tom, is everything, you know, stress, fatigue, relationship dynamics, all of those things. And what happens in a relationship is when we first meet someone, we're doing a lot of work seducing, and we're doing a lot of work creating a context that's quite sexual and sensual. We go from that mode into maintenance mode of paying bills and, you know, taking care of the house and working our jobs, and sex tends to be put on the back burner. When it comes to a good sex life, it is something that you have to actively participate in cultivating. You need to push up your sleeves, and you need to make the decision that this is going to be a lifestyle that we engage in, that we want good sex, and it's something that you have to make happen. So sometimes it's just a matter of being reminded that, you know, it's something that demands attention just like every other dimension of our wellness.
Okay.
Tom, thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. 1-800-348-2551. We're almost done. Let's go to Felice in Saratoga. Felice, you're on.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say thank you for everything you've shared, and just see if you have any additional advice for the woman who loves to have sex and now has gone through menopause, and it's just the libido has dropped, the dryness has hit, and it's, you know, we joke about it, but it's not what it used to be. And any advice for me?
And by the way, you're not alone in asking these questions. And since we're at the end of the show, I wanted to point out that this is a very popular question.
Yeah, you definitely aren't alone. And again, Christian Northrup's work around the wisdom of menopause and the secret desires of menopause are terrific books for you to get. And also, I'm wondering if you have already checked in with your MD.
Absolutely.
Okay. And gotten some advice on how to move forward. How is your relationship if you're in one at this point?
It's fantastic. I'm very lucky.
Well, that's,
and he's very understanding.
Yeah. And that's the good news, because now you get to have fun and explore and play and see what might feel good considering the changes that your body is going through or has gone through. And you need to recreate your sexual self at this point in your life. And you sound like you have a wonderful person to do that with. So jump in and explore. Don't give up on that.
Thank you.
You're
okay,
welcome.
And thank you, Felice. Okay. So I'm so sorry, everybody. We're sort of out of time. My apologies to those people left on the line. I want to thank Dr. Bridget Finn for joining us today. You were terrific, Bridget.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy. Thanks to Joe Makowitz for answering the phones. Our producers, Jessica Blaustein Marshall, and I'm Alan Chartok. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop. Remember, the conversation continues online at wamc.org/voxpop. Stay tuned now for a news update.